Okay, all, we are going to begin. Thank you for coming out for this evening's reading by C.A. Conrad and Jeremy Hallinan. It's our pleasure to be hosting them and to be hosting you. And we'd like to thank Jeremy for his help in setting up this reading. Thank you. First, this word. For the good of the whole unit, the readers and listeners, it would be sweet of you to turn your cell phone to its hushed setting. And you do want to be sweet, don't you? Thank you. And at the conclusion of this evening's reading, if you find, and you probably will, that you would like to hear more from these guys, tomorrow night at 7:30 at SPLAB in Columbia City, they will be reading. $5 suggested donation. You can learn more at the SPLAB website, which is splab.org. Splab.org. It's organic. C.A. Conrad will be the first reader. He comes here tonight with the fanfare of chatter. In 2010, he had two books published, The City Real and Imagined, a collaboration with Frank Sherlock, and his opus, The Book of Frank, originally published by Chax, was republished by our dear friends at Wave Books in an expanded edition, including an afterword by the ever-electric Eileen Miles. Did you follow that? No matter, the chatter preceding C.A. Conrad's appearance tonight is that his work is great and strange. The world that is Frank's is bizarre and is achingly ours. With an effervescent wit and a savage tongue, C.A. Conrad's poems are as if on fire, the burning bush kind of fire. A fire that declares a world, but holds that world in such affection it does not consume it. I am pleased to ask you to join me in welcoming C.A. Conrad.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody who made this possible. Can you all hear me? Yeah, does somebody just point up? Oh, you said yes. Okay. So, I just saw this Frank O'Hara book on the shelf, so I thought I want to start off with my favorite Frank O'Hara poem. It's called How to Get There. White the October air, no snow, easy to breathe beneath the sky. Lies, lies everywhere, writhing and gasping, clutching and tangling. It is not easy to breathe. Lies building their tendrils into dim figures, who disappears down corridors and west side apartments in the childhood's proof of being wanted, not abandoned. Kidnapped. Betrayal staving off loneliness. I see the fog lunge in and hide it. Where are you? Here I am on the sidewalk, under the moon-like lamplight, thinking how precious moss is. So unique and greenly crushable if you can find it on the north side of the tree, where the fog binds you, and then, tearing apart into soft white lies, spreads its disease through the primal night of an everlasting winter, which nevertheless has heat and tubes, west side and east side, and its intricate individual pathways of white accompanied by the ringing of telephone bells, beside which someone sits in silence, denying their own number, never given out, nameless, like the sound of troika bells rushing past suffering in the first storm. It is snowing now. It is already too late. The snow will go away, but nobody will be there. Police cordons for lying political dignitaries ringing too. The world becomes a jangle. First the index finger to the vast empty houses filled with people, their echoes of lies, and the tendrils of fog trailing softly around their throats. Now the phone can be answered. Nobody calling. Only an echo. All can confess to be home and waiting. All is the same, and we drift into the clear sky, enthralled by her disappointment, never to be alone again, never to be loved, sailing through space. Didn't I have you once for myself, West Side, for a couple of hours? But I am not that person. So I write poems right now that are called somatics, and I'm putting together a new book of them. It's kind of not good. It's going to come out next spring, and I wanted to start off with reading three of those. I create these rather elaborate exercises, and then I put myself through them. There's a chapbook I'm not going to be reading from that they have for sale here. That's the first poems I wrote from that, where I ate a single color of food for a day, and would wear that. You know, for the red poem, I wore a red wig that I found in a dumpster behind the Beauty Academy in Philadelphia, where I live. That half the wig is permed and the other half is straight. I guess it was a class, you know. But I'm not going to be reading from that. I'm going to read this first one. Is the exercise is titled "Anoint Thyself," and it's for my friends John Coletti and Jess Mines. Visit the home of a deceased poet you admire and bring some natural thing back with you. I went to Emily Dickinson's house the day after a reading event with my friend Susie Timmons. I scraped dirt from the foot of huge trees in the backyard into a little pot, then drove into the woods where we found miniature pears, apples, and cherries to eat. I meditated in the arms of an oak tree with a pot of Emily's dirt, waking to the flutter of a red cardinal on a branch a foot or so from my face, staring, showing me his little tongue. When I returned to Philadelphia, I didn't shower for 3 days, then rubbed Emily's dirt all over my body, kneaded her rich Massachusetts soil deeply into my flesh, then put on my clothes and went out into the world. Every once in a while, I stuck my nose inside the neck of my shirt to inhale her delicious, sweet earth covering me. I felt re-virginized through the ceremony of my senses. I could feel her power tell me these are the ways to walk and speak and shift each glance and the total concentration for maximum usage of our little allotment of time on a planet. Lose and waste no more time, poet. Lose and waste no more time, she said to me, as I took note after note on the world around me for the poem. So I did the exercise with her dirt, and then I wrote this poem. Now, I really feel like Emily Dickinson is misunderstood. Everybody thinks that she was just a spinster, and she changed everything, and she was a real badass. I mean, she just, she's not the quiet person people want her to be, period. Emily Dickinson came to Earth and then she left. Your sweaty party dress and my sweaty party dress lasted a few minutes until the tomato was gone. Someday they will disambiguate you, but not while I'm around. Our species won, Emily. We won. It feels so good to be winning. The flame of victory, pass it around. It never goes out. Dinosaurs ruled Massachusetts. Dinosaurs fucking and laying eggs in Amherst, Boston, Mount Holyoke. Then you appeared, High Priestess, pulling it out of the goddamn garden with both hands. You, Emily, remember the first time comprehending a struck match can spread a flame. It feels good to win this fair and square. Protest my assessment all you want, but not needing to dream is like not needing to see the world awaken to itself. Indestructible epiphanies consume the path, and just because you're having fun doesn't mean you're not going to die. Recrimination is the fruit to defy with unexpected appetite. I will be your outsider if that's how you need me. Electric company's stupid threatening letters cannot affect a poet who has faced death. So, the idea is that poetry's in everything all the time. And I try to find it as best I can. And I make it happen, and this is an example where I, there was a hurricane passing through Philadelphia, and I went out to be in the hurricane, and a shelter, you know, out near the Liberty Bell, actually. But, so I'll just read the exercise. And you'll see what I did. It's called Storm-Soaked Bread for Julian Berlansky. Sit outside under shelter of a doorway, pavilion, or umbrella on a park bench. But somewhere outside where you can easily touch, smell, taste, feel the storm. Lean your face into the weather, face pointed up to the sky. Stay there a bit with eyes closed, while water fills the wells of your eyes. Come back into the shelter, properly baptized in the beauty of pure elements, and be quiet and still for a few minutes. Take some preliminary notes about your surroundings. Try to not engage with others who might run to your shelter for cover. If they insist on talking, move somewhere else. You are a poet with a storm to digest. This isn't time for small talk. You are not running from the storm. You are opening to it. You are in it. Stick a bare arm or foot into the storm. Let your skin take in a meditative measure of wind and rain. If you are someone who ran from storms in the past, take time to examine the joys of the experience. Remind yourself you are a human being who is approximately 80% water. So what's the harm of a few drops on the outside? Right? Yes. Pause. Hold your breath for the count of four, then write with a fury and without thinking. Just let it flow out of you. Set an empty cup in the storm. Hold a slice of bread in the storm. Then put a little salt and pepper on your storm-soaked bread. Maybe some oregano and garlic. With deliberate slowness, chew your storm bread and drink the storm captured in your cup. Slowly. So slowly. Please, with a slowness which is foreign to you. Think the whole slow time of chewing and drinking, how this water has been in a cycle for millions of years, falling to earth, quenching horses, elephants, lizards, dinosaurs, humans. They pissed, they died, their water evaporated and gathered again into clouds to drizzle down and storm down into rivers, puddles, aqueducts, and ancient cupped hands. Humans who loved, who are long dead, humans who thieved, raped, murdered, were generous, playful, disappointed, fearful, annoyed, and adored one another, each of them dying in their own way, their water going back to the sky, coming back down to your bread, your lips, your stomach, to feed your sinew, your brain, your living, beautiful day. Take your notes, poet. It is your moment to be totally aware, completely awake. So this is the poem I wrote from the hurricane. And the title of it is, One Day I Will Step from the Beauty Parlor and Enlist in the Frequency of Starlings. My favorite morning is not caring if the blood on the sheets is yours or mine. A machine in your station rides me tracks to snacks, snacks to tracks. I feel very fortunate to know magic is real and poetry is real. You can see it in the writing if a belief in one is missing. A mouse eating the dead cat are longed for malfunction. I was born in Topeka, otherwise they would have never let me in. They circle away, holding this place, opening, opening, opening up. I grope the tree down its root. If truth soothes, soothing was not truth's goal. My goal is to do what produces memory, as gentle as vicious can. One promise, when I get to the bottom, I'll accelerate deeper. My small pile of poems surprising everyone along the open wound. Was there a death, they ask? A merger, I say. Everyone paying attention, enjoy your visit. Everyone else, good luck. So I'm going to read one more somatic, and it was in the summer, last summer. I was on my way to a poetry reading in Philadelphia, and I was mugged. And I didn't get stabbed or anything, but, so on my way home on the subway, I thought, well, this is my opportunity to walk my talk, and where I say that I can turn anything into a poem, right? So this is what I did. It's called Mugged into Poetry. If you haven't been stabbed or shot, if they took your money under threat and left, consider a poem. After I was mugged recently in Philadelphia, this exercise came to mind on the subway ride home, the post-mugging subway ride where poetry took its rightful place at the center of my world, where even muggers play a part in it, it being bigger than the knife, more concentrated and firmer than his cock, which will have many admirers in prison. He's going to die. So am I. So are you. He could have easily killed me, he and his three friends, but I'm alive and quite well, writing for poetry as I willingly came to the cesspool of humanity to do. All the globe becomes a poem. It is enough to manage the small part. Here, a body in a body, stinking, beautiful, a bit of tormented, angry, tender, delicious flesh. It is enough, each of us. If we can read this, we are all alive and creative. Anyone who tells you that you are not creative is a coward, afraid of his own potential. Trust me, ignore all cowards. They were born to be ignored. Find your strength, find your poems. Every morning for 2 weeks, as soon as you wake, and predict your death and write it down. For instance, by choking in 11 years, 4 months, 2 weeks, 6 days, 12:18 p.m. Then, starting at the tips of your toes, touch your cells of skin and nails, feel bones, your pulse, hair, feel your moving body in the morning, always moving. As long as you live, you are moving blood through veins, moving thoughts through dreams. Every morning for 2 weeks, touch every inch of your body surface and your holes, moist and dry. As soon as you finish this reaffirming ritual, write a poem from your moving blood and the thoughts of the dream. And combine that living poem with a prediction of your death. So I'm not going to read all 14 of them, but I'll read a few. By choking in 11 years, the title are how I'm dying. Guessing my death, it's called. By choking in 11 years, 4 months, 2 weeks, 6 days, 6, 12, 18 p.m. When I win the lottery, I want my legs amputated, and 2 beautiful peg legs, wooden of course. Frank Sherlock says it's a very bad idea. He says I should reconsider, seriously reconsider. I want peg legs, but he says I regret it, he might be right. But what I really want is to have my real legs, the ones I don't want, cremated, because what I really want is to scatter my own ashes. I thought about getting a liposuction and having the fat cremated, but it's not the same because I can eat more delicious donuts and grow it back. It doesn't count. It has to be something missing for good, you know. But to spread my own ashes is something I love thinking about, and the cheerful sound of my peg legs on Philadelphia sidewalks. By tornado in 16 years, 5 months, 2 weeks, 6 days, 8:49 a.m., I'm trying to make the tree ring. You know I mean this. You know what I mean. Exactly, yes, I'm trying to make the tree ring. It's fortunate more leaves don't cover us in the process. I'm open to abstraction on this page, a painting literally more abstraction, lost in copious design. Some of the orange signs tell us exactly how you go if you drive, or abstract winnings of extractable longitudes. Looters display winning contents on the mattress, a winning collage. Things you use are losing the way to get it, trying to make the tree ring. An effort, you say an effort, but you also say mayonnaise does it better. So then mayonnaise it. By bludgeoning in 4 years, 10 months, 1 week, 1 day, 6:22 a.m. My first Afghani meal was with Frank Sherlock and Ron Silliman, 3 years after the American invasion of Afghanistan. Delicious turnover. How many people were killed that day? The waitress was nice. Was the music Afghani? No, Egyptian. I don't understand Kandahar or the Korangal Valley any more than I do Valley Forge. And I've been to Valley Forge a lot. The deer and the daisies are not why it's remembered. And if the battles had not been waged, those hills would have been part of King of Prussia shopping mall. The importance of war kept the soil free from legions of cement trucks and steel. National Park, the cannon and the cannon, the cannonball tree roots cradle. By electrocution in 4 years, 11 months, 1 week, 1 day, 4:13 p.m. I really love moving while standing still, sitting still. I do it by escalator, bus, elevator, airplane, horse, car, train, trolley, LSD. Must admit, most of my acid trips have been evil. I need a lighter trip, diet, LSD. By falling off a radio tower in 8 years, 4 months, 1 week, 6 days, 3:42 a.m. What I'm about to say is not nostalgia for, or a sentimental reunion for, but a painful need for agreeing that we are not crazy. Sometimes I want to visit the locations of the 3 UFOs I've seen with friends. Brooklyn, New York with Frank Sherlock, Chinatown, Philadelphia with Elizabeth Angelo, Cornwall, England with Joe Mariner. That's a whole other story. Okay. I'd like to end now by reading from the Book of Frank, which I just love this book. Oh, and the Mug into Poetry is a new chapbook that just came out from Cannot Exist Press out of Madison, Wisconsin. It's lovely. I'm very happy about it. I'm very happy with this book. It's all recycled paper, which makes me happy. Instead of virgin forests, it's now, you know, paper that was used for writing grocery lists and love letters, suicide notes, whatever. It makes me happy. When Frank was born, father inspected the small package the nurse handed him. But where's my daughter's cunt? My daughter has no cunt. Mother leaned from the bed. This is your awful son, dear. Your son has no cunt. Why doesn't my son have a cunt? What has happened? What a wicked world, dark and spinning on its one good leg. Frank hated the 9 miscarriages kept in jars of formaldehyde. Mother burped each one, spooned peas against the glass. She rocked them all at once in her arms, no room for Frank. You are too big for a jar, my child. You will betray me the rest of your life. The memoir of George W. Bush, do you know that name?
Decision Points.
Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Wow. Decision Points. But his mother, Barbara Bush, showed him a jar with a fetus in it from a miscarriage that she kept. So there you go. What's going on in the world? Frank ate clear around the sleeping worm of the apple. Any life saved in this place is magic, Frank said. It's life coming back to you. Frank hammers carrots all day. It works. The earth can't leave us. Mother knew where the next war was before Frank by the colors they made her paint the airplanes. Father was drunk and yelling, "And rule number 9, everybody dies." Upon hearing rule number 9, Frank suddenly forgot all other rules. Frank grew crows for hands. It was a difficult childhood. At dinner during prayer, his crows flapped excited in the name of the Lord. Frank, keep still, Mother hollered. Did you wash your crows? Did you wash your filthy, stinking crows? When Father died, Frank was found straddling him, his crows picking the 7 gold fillings. Frank saw a giant eat a park bench with her vagina, drink a swimming pool with her vagina. I saw her swallow the baby and spit out the crib, Frank said. He tiptoed past her snoring uterus one night and heard a few familiar voices cry out. Would you sign my book, Mr. Poe? Frank asked the pile of bones amid shovels of dirt. Why, certainly, young man, answers Frank in a different voice. And this next one, my friend Nail, she had this tattooed on her arm, and now she's coming back to Philadelphia this spring, and I'm going to take a Polaroid of the tattoo, and then that's going to be my tattoo, the Polaroid of her tattoo. Frank knows a butterfly who wonders about her old caterpillar friends. Had to be small, it's a tattoo. I mean, I guess it could be a big tattoo. Frank is grateful for the ride, but knows most trucks carry semen stains. Looking for these, the driver asks, pointing to eager swimmers long since dried on radio, ashtray, cup holder. A cop followed Frank into the diner shouting, "Hey, sleazebag, your shadow's on the street, on his knees blowing mine." Frank looks out the window where a crowd is gathered. "Yeah," Frank says, "they seem to be finishing up." "But no, they're just switching places." At the party, everyone traced fingers on their bodies, where they preferred to have cancer if they had to have cancer. The host asked Frank where he'd like to have his. "What a question," Frank said. "I'd like my cancer right here," and traced a circle on the host instead. From the menu of dead authors, Frank orders Emily Dickinson's breast of dumplings and the braised thigh of Annie's Nin. His wife orders Leo Tolstoy's ring finger with caviar and the candied genitals of Jack Kerouac. Kerouac's erection arrives, shimmering in gravy. "Mmm," she says, nibbling the tip. Frank glares and stabs a breast. Frank hands the cowboy a wad of tissues. "These contain semen I produced when thinking of you." The cowboy sniffs them and smiles. "Thanks, Frank. I'll put them with the others." "Is no one else sick of this paralysis of gravity?" Frank asks. "When I was a boy, I stepped into the sky. And I was a boy, not a surrealist." Part of the dream is that you accept your waking life as part of the dream. Pig says to Frank, "This fence keeps you in your world." Frank says to Pig, "This fence keeps you in your world." Pig says to Frank, "This fence keeps you in your world." Frank says to Pig, "This fence keeps you in your world." Pig says to Frank, "This fence keeps you in your world." Thank you for having me.